Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. My name is Scott Reich, and this is Crime Talk, the most fact-driven, unbiased, true crime channel on YouTube. Thanks for watching. Let's get straight to the docket. First, Nicole Kessinger. That name ring a bell? Well, apparently she doesn't like her name because of the notoriety that comes with it. So much so, she's actually filing to change her name. Second, I told you there was going to be some really good lawyering in the George Floyd case. Third, a man serving a life sentence for stealing some hedge trimmers has been released on parole after 23 years. Fourth, more arrests in the Michigan plot. Fifth, Mark Geragos speaks about his old client, Scott Peterson. And finally, our dumb criminal contestant of the day and a recap for our contestants so that you can decide the winner for the week. Let's talk about it. Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. This is Crime Talk, and my name is Scott Reich. First, if you haven't done so already, we'd ask that you hit that subscribe button. Hit that little bell so that you receive notifications of when we go live or put up new content. And please hit that like button and leave us a comment below. I seriously want to know what your thoughts are on this first story. That's right, Nicole Kessinger. Where have I heard that name before? Oh, that's right. She was involved with that guy named Chris a while back. Kind of dropped off the face of the earth for a while, for at least the last 2 years. Well, guess what? She's back, and she's going to the courts to legally change her name. She has filed for a petition to change her name. This petition was filed in the Jefferson County County Court on October 1st of this year. There's a hearing set for next Thursday. I guess we'll have to see if I can make it up there and check it out. Now, we all remember those audio recordings that you can listen to here regarding interviews with the police. And who can forget the photograph of her striking a pose in her bikini with that guy named Chris in the background taking those photos? Oh, yeah, while he was still married to his wife, Shanann, and having two young daughters, and oh, his wife being pregnant as well. Yep, that guy. So, what does it take to actually change your name in most states? I can tell you in Colorado, which is the one we're dealing with here, is that you simply have to file a petition with the local court. And here it's done in the county in which you reside. And you file an affidavit stating that this is who you are, and you have to give a reason for the reason that you're seeking a name change. Now, we're unable to get Miss Kessinger's affidavit because her attorney has asked that the case be sealed, which means that no public access. Have a real problem with cases being sealed since these are supposed to be public records. So once the affidavit is submitted, she has to submit a criminal background check at her expense, disclosing any criminal dispositions. Apparently being potential key witness in a case may not come into play. But then you have to publish notice of the petition in local newspapers three times, and then filing a proof of publication with the court. Haven't seen any of those publications just yet, so we'll see if they can get them done by the time the hearing is set. And then ultimately at the hearing, the court will consider the petition. Now, Colorado is pretty keen to prevent fraud, identity theft, and other evils that may arise from a name change, and the petitions can be denied if the name change would be detrimental to anyone else. It's if it was made for a fraudulent or illegal purpose or even improper in the eyes of the judge. Now, Ms. Kessinger was never convicted of anything, but the courts have a higher hurdle if someone had in fact been convicted of a crime. Once Ms. Kessinger gets that name change, she would basically be able to change everything and in fact go to the Social Security Administration to get her name reissued. She could also then go to DMV and get a new driver's license in the new name. No word yet on the new name that Ms. Kessinger would like to use, but as soon as we find out, we'll let you know. Next on the docket, the George Floyd case. I told you there was going to be some really good lawyering taking place in this particular case. Now, the prosecutors are working with what has been given to them. And I said, whether you like the case or not, guess what? The attorneys for the now former officers in this case were going to do everything they can in their power to make sure that their clients receive a fair trial. And they are certainly putting forth a huge effort. So former police officer Thomas Lane, through his attorney, well, they had a pretrial hearing yesterday in the Minnesota District Court. Now, the judge still needs to decide if the footage, which is unrelated to the encounter that led to Mr. Floyd's death, will be used in evidence next year. So the judge still needs to decide if the footage, which is completely unrelated to the encounter that led to the death of George Floyd, will be used in trial as evidence, which is set for next year. For now, it will be made available at some point to the public and the media, though it's not exactly clear when that's going to happen. Now, the defense attorneys would like to use this old body camera footage to show that Floyd has a history of not obeying law enforcement, while prosecutors argue, of course, that the prior incident has nothing to do with what happened the day that Floyd was killed. Now, remember when we've talked about 404B evidence, other evidence or wrongs of the defendant to be brought in to show lack of mistake, modus operandi? For a defendant, that comes in under 404B. If a specific articulable reason can be tailored and the court is satisfied with that reason, that it comes in for that limited purpose. Well, guess what? You can bring in what was referred to as 404B evidence, other crimes or wrongs or misconduct, as it relates to other witnesses as well, particularly in this particular case, because the evidence goes to show that he disobeyed on previous occasions. Now, it's unclear if this video shows the same officers engaging with Mr. Floyd on this video. That would certainly be much more relevant than if it's just a random encounter with another police officer who wasn't involved with the incident that ultimately resulted in Mr. Floyd's death. And this prior incident between Floyd and the Minneapolis Police Department occurred May 6, 2019. Lane's attorney filed some 7 exhibits with this motion, 3 body-worn camera videos from the incident and their accompanying transcript, and a 4th transcript from an audio-only file, according to court records. Now, the defense argued that the body cam footage shows exactly how the May 6th stop played out in real time and that this behavior is an exact replica in the encounter on May 25th, where Mr. Floyd passed away. Now, the prosecutors in this case obviously seen what the defense is trying to do, which is to get their side of the story out there, even if it's evidence that may not be admissible in court, it's admissible in the court of public opinion. So the prosecutors had previously filed a motion to restrict public access to all future motions and exhibits for 2 days to give parties the time to review the filings and potentially oppose public disclosure. Now, the judge denied that motion and ordered that all video exhibits filed by Mr. Lane through his attorneys be immediately made available for viewing and copying by the press and public. Now, Cahill, the judge, also admonished defense attorneys for submitting the motion in this high-profile case with the old body cam videos attached, which makes it a public record. Court asked that any future filings include written descriptions in place of the video. Now, that is some good lawyering there, ladies and gentlemen. They are getting their case to the public, to the potential jurors. You may not like it, but the defense did nothing wrong, and they're doing everything that's permitted within the law. Good lawyering is what I say. Next on the docket, a man serving a life sentence for stealing hedge clippers has been paroled after 23 years in prison. Fair Wayne Bryant, who was convicted in 1997 of burglary, was released Thursday after a unanimous vote by his parole committee. Now, the Louisiana Supreme Court had called for the release of the 63-year-old convict earlier this year for the theft from a carport storage room. Mr. Bryant was sentenced to a life sentence as he was sentenced under Louisiana's habitual criminal law. This case has drawn a lot of attention because the Louisiana Supreme Court, through Justice Burnett Johnson, had referred to the onerous habitual offender law, which Bryant was sentenced, as a modern manifestation of the Jim Crow era laws. Of course, there's always proponents of the habitual laws, and said that the law has been in place and that a burglary occurred at an inhabited residence. Bryant likely would have had stolen more items had he not been chased away by the homeowners. They also brought up his history of alcohol and cocaine use. Mr. Bryant concedes that he had a drug problem, but for the last 24 years, he's recognized that problem and he's in constant communication with the Lord to help him get him through that problem. Conditions of the parole include Alcoholics Anonymous meetings, performing community service, and a strict 6 p.m. curfew. The American Civil Liberties Union states that it is imperative that the legislature repeal the habitual offender law that allows for these unfair sentences, and for district attorneys across the state to immediately stop seeking extreme penalties for minor offenses. Now, I can tell you, nothing is worse than when the district attorney says we're going to file the bitch against your clients. That's right, habitual criminal charges. So for example, here in Colorado, if you have a crime that has a presumptive range of 4 to 12 years, it could be 4 times the max presumptive. So 12 times 4 is 48 years. And it simply has to be a charge that was a felony that the defendant received, and it still remains a felony to this day. If that's enough, boom, they put in the convictions, the sealed convictions, and the court has to sentence the defendant to 48 years under my example. Now, the problem with the habitual criminal statutes are that they are completely discretionary to the district attorney. Sometimes you can have a client that will have, say, 7 felony convictions and nobody wants to file habitual criminal charges against them, which is good for your client. Other times you have a client that is charged with a crime and he has 3 priors and the DA says, we're going to file the bitch against him immediately. Or they use it as a bargaining tool and says, and say that if your client does not plead guilty, we will then file the habitual criminal charges, which means obviously the stakes become much higher and it's used as a tool for leverage on cases that are potentially weaker, but your client doesn't want to necessarily risk spending 4 times the presumptive range in prison, which normally means the rest of their life. Quick recess. Please go to crimetalksearch.com. Sign up for a background subscription service today. You'll be absolutely happy that you did. Like, let's say, for example, you know somebody and you think maybe they've changed their name. You can find this information out on a criminal background search. And you do that when you sign up. You can then anonymously search as many people as you want, and you're going to get a background search that has the identifying information for phone numbers, emails, and social media. You'll get criminal records, property records, divorce records, and civil judgments. All types of things that you'll know about an individual, and sometimes they're not necessarily going to volunteer to you because it's going to make them not look great. So let's say, for example, somebody wants to drop off the face of the earth. You're still going to be able to find him. We ran a background search on, let's say, somebody that wants to change their name. It comes back to residents, say, here and in Oregon. At least you can narrow it down and figure out what's going on. I'm telling you, it's an invaluable tool. We use it all the time here in my law firm, and you should have access to it as well. Go to crimetalksearch.com, sign up today. Next on the docket, more arrests in that Michigan plot. A 14th man has been charged related to the plot to kidnap the Michigan governor, Gretchen Whitmer, and maybe a plot to also storm the Capitol building in Lansing in an attempt to foment a civil war. Bad, bad judgment on these individuals for sure. But the new suspect, Brian Higgins, 51, of Wisconsin Dells, Wisconsin, faces a state charge of material support of an act of terrorism, joining 7 other men facing charges and 6 charged in federal court. Now, if you take a look at these individuals here on this photograph, I'm not exactly sure that these are the people that you want to entrust the overthrow of the government, that's for sure. I'm not sure by the looks that they could actually pull that off, and obviously they didn't. So maybe sometimes it's good that sometimes not the usually smartest people in the room get caught doing these types of things. We'll continue to see how this case develops. Next on the docket, let's talk a little bit about Mark Garagos. Why? That's right. He's the man who represented Scott Peterson in his trial back in 2004. Well, Mark Garagos said that if the trial was held today, there is no way that his former client, Scott Peterson, would be convicted. Now, Mr. Garagos asserted that at trial, they complained about what they referred to as stealth jurors who lied to get on the case. He said he had no general concerns about Nice when she was originally an alternate. But as we all know now, Peterson's appellate team says that Nice lied on a juror questionnaire, omitted that she previously filed for a restraining order against her then-boyfriend's ex-girlfriend for alleged harassment. Nice had stated in that application that she had been in fear for her unborn child, according to the application. But she asserted in a 27 interview with the press that she had dropped the order and actually had become friends with the woman. Ms. Nice stated that this other woman never threatened to kill her or her unborn child or to beat her up in any way. Ms. Nice stated that when she filled out that questionnaire, my situation never came into my mind because it was not similar at all. Now, if anyone's ever been to jury duty, they usually ask, have you ever been involved in any type of case, whether it's civil, a criminal case, or even a proceeding regarding a restraining order? Those are relevant. And when the court asks you to rack your mind, most jurors disclose that information, even if they may not be relevant, just because of full disclosure. I usually have jurors on my cases over-disclose because they don't want to get in trouble. They don't want to cause a situation like has been caused now in this Peterson case. And, you know, it's been a long time, but this was not the strongest case, but it was a very emotional case. Certainly some bad consciousness of guilt evidence for sure, as it related to Mr. Peterson trying to make a run for the border with his new hairdo. However, a lot of that stuff has been debunked over the last 16 years, and it may not have been readily available at that time, but this is why we have the appellate process. This is why we have post-conviction proceedings, to make sure the truth comes out. I think the state of California is going to be in a tight spot when they have this hearing. And I think based upon the ruling of the California Supreme Court that previously vacated the sentence of death for Scott Peterson because the court got rid of jurors prematurely simply because they had expressed a view regarding the death penalty, but the court never inquired that their views would prevent them from following the law, which is to impose the death penalty. There are a lot of people that oppose the death penalty, but it doesn't mean that they can't follow the law. And that's always weird. We've talked about this before. If they qualify a jury as a death jury, you have to be able to say that you will follow the law. If you say there's no way I would ever impose the death penalty, guess what? You won't be a juror. But if you say, gee, I have my doubts about the death penalty, but I can still follow the law, you're a qualified juror. In this particular case, the judge got rid of those jurors that said, I'm mixed, I don't know, it's a big decision to make, but I guess I could follow the law. They should have been kept to be eligible jurors on the jury. We'll see how this plays out. It's going to be months, if not years, until this is finally resolved. Next on the docket, our dumb criminal contestant of the day, and then a quick recap of our contestants, so that our Crime Talk jury can decide who the winner may be. Our dumb criminal contestant of the day is a gentleman by the name of Daniel Frazier. Well, he was busted for, allegedly of course, breaking headstones and digging holes during the failed seance to resurrect his grandmother. That's right. The alleged grave-wrecking ghost whisperer was charged with vandalism and criminal trespassing. The only thing that he told police officers was that he was there to resurrect Grandma. It's uncertain why he thought he could resurrect Grandma or under what means he was going to do that. But what we do know is this Tennessee man caused $30,000 in damage to the cemetery in Knoxville, Tennessee. So, Daniel Frazier, you are a dumb criminal contestant of the day. Congratulations. Now, a quick recap of our contestants this week. First, we had Erica Piedra. She was assaulting the bus driver both verbally and physically because the bus was some 30 minutes late based upon their appointed rounds. Next, we had Katanya Jordan, 46, who assaulted her 69-year-old boyfriend because they were having a fight over the crack pipe and he would not orally pleasure her, which of course resulted in a fight. Then we had Danny Dayrons, who assaulted an individual because they gave bad reviews to his restaurant on Yelp. Then we had Jordan Patikas, who was walking around in his gorilla suit, waving a machete and firing off fireworks. Now, those are our contestants for the week. Please let us know in the comments below who should be the winner. And the winner gets, that's right, a Crime Talk mug. We will track them down using our handy dandy background subscription service, and we will send them a mug. We've sent a couple of these out, had no response yet, not even a thank you. But maybe eventually someone will come on Crime Talk and tell us about what really got them here to the point where they got a Crime Talk mug for free. As always, if you want Crime Talk merchandise, specifically a mug or a shirt or a sweatshirt, you don't have to become a dumb criminal contestant to get that. You simply have to go to the link below for Teespring, order your items, bam, it'll be to you in no time at all. You'll be so excited when you do. Get your gear, and when you do, send us a picture of it. We'll put it on our Instagram, and we'll have our Crime Talk mug shot section where everyone can send us their Crime Talk gear. All right, that's all we have for today. I hope you had a great week. Next week will always be better. Remember that. And we'll see you next time on Crime Talk.